So, anyone have any questions from last time before we jump into chapter 6? Well, I guess I'll get us started then. I'm just going to read two verses to start with, because I figured we've been going too fast lately. Actually, I probably shouldn't. I should probably go further. But, maybe I'll read the first 10. Hey. So, 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 1. We then, as workers, together with them, with him, also plead with you not to receive the grace of God in vain. For he says, in an acceptable time I have heard you, in the day of salvation I have helped you. Behold, now is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation. We give no offense in anything, that our ministry may not be blamed. But in all things we commend ourselves as ministers of God, in much patience, in tribulations, in needs, in distresses, in stripes, in imprisonment, in tumults, in labors, in sleeplessness, in fastings, by purity, by knowledge, by long-suffering, by kindness, by the Holy Spirit, by sincere love, by the word of truth, by the power of God, by the armor of righteousness on the right hand and on the left, by honor and dishonor, by evil report and good report, as deceivers and yet true, as unknown and yet well known, as dying and behold we live, as chastened and yet not killed, as sorrowful, yet always rejoicing, as poor, yet making many rich, as having nothing and yet possessing all things.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think about all that?
I'm trying to, maybe I'm not understanding it, but verse 8 seems to be, maybe I'm, seems to be interesting.
I'm thinking that he's talking to the Corinthians, and he's talking about we as being those that are teaching, and you as being the Corinthians, and he's going over all the things that he's gone through. And things that he would go through, you know, things that we probably would go through too as Christians. That's how I view this. I don't know, maybe that's wrong. I'm not sure.
So, yeah, so in verse 8, what parts are you looking at there? I think I know what you're getting at, but...
Yeah, it's kind of like Jerry said, we as workers, then he's giving, you know, we have grace in all things, you know, he's contrasting honor and dishonor, and and then he gets to verse 8, and he talks about, by evil report, as deceivers, and yet true.
So he's talking about different perspectives, I think, there, right?
There's a perspective of someone else looking in.
Yeah, I think that's what's talking about. As if we were deceivers, yet we're true. As if we were doing evil report, but we're not, you know. Like where he talks about as having nothing and yet possessing all things.
Yeah.
You know, there's a perception.
Yeah.
You know, and especially if you look at verse 3, we give no offense in anything that our ministry may not be blamed. So one of the context he's setting there is, as we go further in this verse, when we get to verse 11, we didn't get to, but he's basically saying to them, you know, you guys are not open to our ministry. You're withholding yourself back. You're being closed. You're not being trusting. You're not embracing us in your midst as ministers. So there's this theme that he keeps returning to all the way through these letters to Corinth, where he's trying to say, we're qualified to be your teachers and to be helping you with these things, but you keep looking to other people instead. So he's having to keep commending himself. Because like later you'll see, he talks about, you know, in chapter 7, he's going to say, open your hearts to us, we've wronged no one. Mm-hmm. And then he talks to them, he says things like, in verse 13 of chapter 6, I speak as to children, you also be open. So he's trying to come at them from a point of view of saying, look, you know, I'm qualified as your spiritual father.
Oh.
You're turning to these other teachers and these other people that aren't qualified, that are criticizing me. Right.
They're saying he's dishonorable and a deceiver.
Right.
Right.
And later on, he's going to call them false apostles. Yeah. And he's going to say some really hard things about them. So in verse 4, in all things we commend ourselves as ministers of God. He's not just saying in general that we as Christians commend ourselves as ministers, although there's aspects of that in this, but I think he's saying, you know, to the Corinthians in particular, look at all the stuff we're going through, and, you know, some people are giving evil reports, and some people give good reports.
Mm.
We just, you know, and people think we're deceivers, but we're true. It's like if you go on the internet or read in the newspaper, the average non-believer's response to Christianity or Christians or pastors or whatever, they think that we're just teaching a big bunch of lies.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just like deceiving people. So from their point of view, you know, we're dishonorable and we're deceivers, and yet we're true. We're teaching the truth. And I think that's part of what Paul's getting at in these contrasts. You know, some of them are real contrasting. We're coming under all these difficult things, but we're not being killed. But other things are just reputation and accusations that aren't really true. So like when he's talking about imprisonments, tumults, labors, sleeplessness, fastings, those are all things he really... But I think when he gets to, you know, dishonorable, evil report, deceivers, I don't think that he's saying, you know, that those are things that we're doing.
Right.
I think he's saying that's what people say about us, or we have to live under that reputation.
Mm-hmm.
From others, because there's, you know, there's in the Christian walk, there's, you're always going to have people, you know, both unbelievers and believers, that don't like your ministry for whatever reason. And sometimes you'll know about it, and other times you won't. You know, your reputation or whatever will just, people will give evil reports about you to other people, and you don't even know about it.
Mm.
You know. So, you know, I mean, one time I remember on the internet, I ran across this guy who he had this whole big article accusing Tony Garland of being a heretic. Yeah. Yeah. And then he had a bunch of stuff on his page that isn't what I teach, right? So, and how in the world he even got my name, or got my how I got his attention somehow, I have no idea. But there you are, you know, there's somebody who's saying that you're teaching heresy, and I don't even know the guy. I've never even seen him or talked to him, but, you know, he just listened to something or run across the website or whatever, and he's just decided I'm a heretic. So that... You know, it's nothing like Paul, but it's the same sort of thing where, okay, there's an evil report, and this is a believer, right?
Yeah, of course.
So like when you're, it's bad enough when you're dealing with people who don't like Christ, but here's a brother in Christ who's basically saying you're a heretic, and, you know, you don't even know them. They don't know you either, you know? So there's this whole, you know, the people that are not believers are looking for the slightest excuse to diss us. They want to say, they're no different than us.
Mm-hmm.
Or, they're worse than us. Because they pretend to be different. At least we're honest that we're scumbags. They pretend to be holy, and they're double scumbags, mm-hmm. right? And then you have believers who, there's a wide range of believers, but there is a category of believer that they're very intense, and they're how do you want to put it? They're just microscope inspectors. There's no grace. So if you say something, rather than get to know you and spend time with you to see the balance of what you have to say, they just take that one little thing and run with it out of context, or, you know, whatever. So, you know, and I think Paul had the same sort of thing with his ministry, you know, and I think it's just common everywhere. It's just part of being a Christian, is that, you know, a lot of people aren't going to take the time to really find out what's true about you and or get to know you, and so you're going to get this sort of thing where people think you're a deceiver, teaching heresy, whatever, or evil report. So some of the stuff you go through is just part of Christian persecution, and another part of it is just the fact that anytime you're doing anything that has to do with spiritual work, there's just a lot of flack that comes from
it. Probably every pastor.
Mm-hmm.
I would think, I've heard Mike talk about that too.
Mm-hmm.
Things that have been said about him.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there's Charles Spurgeon, right? The British pastor who was fairly famous. He wrote a book called, it's a series of sermons he gave. He had a school where he trained pastors, and it's a series of letters, I think it's called Letters to My Students or something, mm-hmm. And they put them together into a book. But one of them is called One Blind Eye and One Deaf Ear,
mm-hmm.
And it's basically the idea that as a shepherd, you need to have one blind eye and one deaf ear, because otherwise you're just going to get offended all the time, and it's going to drive you nuts. So mm-hmm. you expect that this stuff's going to happen, and you just look past it. Anyway, he has a whole sermon on it, and he had way more insight on it. So if you ever want to read it, it's worth reading. Yeah, he's they call him the Prince of the Preachers. And he said, just about everything I've read by him is awesome. Yeah. So I think that's, you know, maybe part of what he's getting at here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in verse 9, as unknown and yet well known. You know, so you can imagine the background behind that. Well, who is this guy
mm-hmm.
to say this or to say that? You know, where does he come from, right?
Not really one of the apostles.
No, he's not really one of the apostles, exactly.
Yeah.
And so Paul had this problem the whole
mm-hmm.
time.
Yeah.
Because he, as he said, he was born out of due time and the least of the apostles. But when you step back and look, you know, he's correcting Peter
mm-hmm.
in public. He ends up writing, you know, 13 letters or whatever in the New Testament. And he was the number one persecutor of the church initially. So he has to come out from all that and turn around and end up, you know, it's a wonder he didn't spend more time trying to justify himself than he did in these letters. And I like the first part of this too, where it talks about now is the day of salvation, because, you know, you hear people use that a lot, and I think it's a really sound idea, because it kind of recognizes this idea that people are either moving toward God or they're moving away mm-hmm. from God, and there's this kind of concept that people have, which is kind of a natural concept, that says, you know, the longer you consider something before you make a decision, then the better your decision is going to be and the more knowledgeable you're going to be about it. That's kind of the human approach to things, right? You're going to buy a car, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to check out the car. And if you mull over that type of vehicle for maybe 3 years, you really know what kind of car, you know, mm-hmm. what you're going to get. But the spiritual things aren't really like that. You know, there's this whole idea that there's spiritual opportunities, and when you turn those opportunities down, then the Bible talks a lot about the fact that you're actually kind of hardening you're hardening your heart toward the things of God. And so there's this idea of building a calloused heart, where you were more sensitive initially, and as time goes by, as you continue to refuse opportunities to turn to God, then there's a potential that it's going to be harder for you in the future to respond, or you're going to be less likely to respond. Of course, the Holy Spirit's in the mix and a lot of other things, so, you know, for each person, things are going to be somewhat different, but broad brush, that's one of the principles. And so when, you know, you talk to people, it's like, well, you know, on my deathbed, you know, when I think I might need it, then I'll turn to Christ or something, and you can virtually say, well, no, you won't. Because you think you will, but by the time you get older and older, you've lived so much longer rationalizing and turning away, you know. And of course, there's always the miracle that God saves people when they're older, right? So you can't just make a blanket statement about it. There's always hope. There's always prayer. But it's frustrating when you have parents where they're just going year after year after year, and you, if anything, it seems like they're drifting even a little further away. And so, you know, you come to the verses like this, you know, that this whole business about God extending grace and, you know, don't pass up His grace.
I noticed, like going to church, you know, like you start out, you may end up going Sunday afternoon, Sunday night, Wednesdays, you know, and when they're having prayer, you're there, and Saturday, before long, you drop off one of them, and then before long, you're dropping off another one, and before long, you're just going to church, and then who knows what's going to happen after that, you know, so it could happen easily, I think, to any one of us. I've been through that, so it's easier. once you don't do it, it's so much easier. Well, not to do it the next time, you know. So it's kind of like you almost have to force yourself you don't have to beat up the body. I think maybe you flash a little bit and say, we're gonna go. You and me, we're gonna go.
Yeah, so it's not just salvation, it's sanctification.
Yeah, yeah. I think maybe that's why a lot of people fall away, because they start drifting, you know. You start drifting.
You think, okay, my kids are young, I need to go, and then after the kids are growing, now they're teenagers, it's harder, they don't want to go, so okay, I don't need to go.
It's easier then. Easier not
and then
to
they're not going at all, even after the kids are out of nest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's all true.
Yeah, and the tricky part is it's always a gradual, often it's a very gradual.
Yeah.
You know, you have to kind of put your foot down. You know, you don't often see it, but you kind of have to put your foot down at some point, and that's where it comes down to, you know. There's times in the Christian walk, a lot of times, where it's not fun. You do things because you don't even want to do them, but you do them out of obedience and out of knowing that, you know, I can't allow that to happen. I can't allow that. I can't just drift away. Yeah.
I heard, I don't know if it's true or not, it seems to me like there's something in the Bible about there's a special blessing when you do something that you should do, but you really don't want to do it, you know. I wish I could remember where it was.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like I read something along that line. God gives you...
Well, it's easy to do something that you're really excited about.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That doesn't take any effort or faith even. Just to, okay, cool, see that. It's not, you know, it's not as easy one. I don't really want to do that, but I'm going to.
Like Jesus said, it's easy to love those you love, you know.
Exactly.
But those you don't love, you know, those you love, they're not that easy to love. That's what we're supposed to do.
Now we're getting into motive.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't really want to do this, but I will. You know, and you kind of go, I'm going, motive here. Mm-hmm. Why are you doing it?
Yeah. But I think, you know, if you look at the word obedience, okay, and it says, you know, obedience is better than sacrifice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there are situations where your motive is not going to be all rosy heart motivation, though I just love Christ, I'm going to do it because I love it. I love him all the time, 100% of the time. There are going to be times where you don't feel the same, you know, at least that's been my experience. I mean, there have been Monday nights, there's been a lot of Monday nights where the last thing I want to do is come and teach a Bible study.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I've been doing Monday night Bible study for 20 years. And so, you know, most of the time that's not the case, but there are times where the last thing I want to do is, and plus, I don't just waltz in here, you know, I spend time ahead preparing, even though you can't tell. But the thing is, though, you know, to my mind, it's a little bit like a marriage, right? There are times in a marriage where it's not easy to be together that day or those few hours or whatever, but you push through it because you can see the bigger picture beyond how you're feeling. And when you do push through that, then there are riches that come from that.
Yeah.
So it's that whole business that love is a decision, not just a feeling, right? At least that's been my experience. And so, you know, there are times where, you know, you really feel drawn to worship or prayer or whatever, and other times where you don't. And if you just said, well, the ones, you know, if I don't feel like it today, I just won't do it, that's one thing. But if it's like goes on for, you know, a week or two, then I think, you know, there's some value in just saying, look, you know, this is my flesh, and if I push through this, if I press into this, then, you know, it's a little bit like jogging or running too. There's times where you don't feel like going out running at all, but once you get your stuff on and you get out there and you get like half a mile into it,
you
then
really don't feel like doing
it.
Why did I do this?
I'm just joking.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You know, Jesus told
that
one parable about the father and two sons. He told the one son, go work in the field, and he says, I will, but then he doesn't do it. And then he told the other one, go work in the field, and he says, no. But then he felt afterwards, he feels remorse, and goes to do it. And he asked, and afterwards, you know, Jesus asks, which one, in the end, did the will of his father?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, Sid brings up a good point. It's about motive, and motive definitely is important. We can see that throughout the Bible, but, you know, we're only human.
Motive.
Which one did?
Oh, the one that said no at first, but
then he felt bad and went
to the field.
Mm-hmm.
I think our conscious enters into it too, and the Holy Spirit will convict us, you know, if we're, you know, that's part of his job. But our conscience definitely. I'm not sure what is. What's your definition of conscience anyway?
I'm not getting into that.
That's a tough thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Jiminy Cricket or whatever. You know.
I think in the Bible it's a locust, not a cricket.
Jiminy locust.
Well, and then you have your
subconscious. Larry locust,
which is even more mysterious.
Yeah. But I still go back to you do what's important to you.
Well, yeah.
And so if it's important to you, you still got that carried in the back. You might not feel like it,
right,
but it's important to you.
Yeah.
So you push everything aside and you go and do it.
Right.
And
so there's discipline involved in it.
Right.
Yeah.
And your bend, that's what you're going to be. It's just important. And, you know, it's not today, but I'm still going to do it. And so when you look at the overall of the whole guy's life, it's really very slightly up and down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, not big long sections.
No, yeah, I think you're right on as far as ultimately. I think it's easy to fall into a pattern where your motives are not the right biblical motives. I'm talking more about, you know, lapses, shorter periods of time where, you know. Because I think if you have a larger period of time where you're really struggling with this, then there are bigger issues involved than just maintaining in the faith, you know. Well, it's like I was saying the other day, I guess it was at Zion Christian Fellowship, but just this idea that faithfulness is boring and it can be real routine and it's like you don't notice it, but it can be really draining, you know. That's the whole business of waiting on the Lord and He'll renew your strength, you know, but there are times where, you know, it's just not glamorous to be faithful. It requires, you know, however you want to use the word requires, but it ends up requiring kind of a steadfastness. Yeah.
Well, I mean, what you said before about, you know, love, and it's not a feeling, but it's a decision. And it's, my thought has always been that love is a decision to be committed to something. So if you, love God, you're committed to God. God is important to you. You place pretty high value on the things that He wants.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I think last time I was in church and I spoke on Proverbs, I kind of made this point. I don't remember if anybody else remembers, but...
no, we don't hear anything you
said. Yeah. So I kind of made the point that, like, in the Old Testament, there was a lot more of this concept of fear of the Lord.
Yeah.
In the New Testament, there's more of the concept of love the Lord. Mm-hmm. But in the end, they both kind of produce the same result, obedience. And both are about commitment and resolve, conviction.
Mm-hmm. And I think really when you boil it down, those are things that are tough to find in our culture. You know, commitment is it just feeling people being committed either in a relationship or, you know, in their Christian walk or whatever, because there's this, like we've talked about before, there's a pretty heavy focus on self. And so because of that, then more of what you're doing is based on feelings or things that benefit you rather than a commitment to, say, something else that's bigger than yourself.
Jesus, I think it's John 4 where He says, if you love Me, you will do My words, you will do what I tell you. So that He's equating love with our commitment to obey.
Right.
So so we may not feel the love, but if we're obeying, we're actually loving.
mm-hmm.
But I think Jesus kind of did at the Gethsemane when He told the apostles they kept falling asleep. He said, you know, He says, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. So that's what you're battling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But I think that's one of the keys, like what Jerry's talking about, when somebody's first saved, I mean, they're at church every minute of the day, and if you have a church that meets a lot, I mean, you can be there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But this gets back to a whole nother topic too, which I wasn't really thinking of, but this issue of what kind of a fellowship do you want to be in, that you're going to be able to maintain in the long run, you know, because I think there are different Christian ministries with different styles, and some of the ministries are sprint races. You get really excited, really focused, and you're running a sprint, but you're not going to make the marathon. And there's aspects of how those ministries operate that lead you to burnout, Christian burnout. I'm not saying you lose your faith necessarily, but feeling burned out and falling away and not having the longer term joy and peace of the Lord. And so I think that's one of the things where it could be helpful to, you know, like it talks about in the Bible, it talks about elders, people who are older that have gone through some of that stuff, and they know those subtleties. And so then, because it's easy to build a ministry where you build a ministry by with some amount of hype. It's not you know, it's not obvious hype, but it's you know, certain things you can focus on that people get really excited about for a while. But it's, and I always say this, it's more like Twinkies. It's like a Twinkie ministry where you keep doling out Twinkies and Coca-Colas and chocolate bars. And when you're giving out Twinkies,
making me hungry stuff.
You can get, you know, you can get, you know, people are throwing out that kind of stuff. You can get an initial crowd pretty good, but, you know, if you're putting out spinach and Brussels sprouts, and, right, then, you know, but in the longer run, you really, what you want a biblical faith, which is running the race. It's a race, but it's a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like a marathon. Because, you know, it's for a lot of people, when we come to faith, it's going to be a lot of years. We don't know. It could be the next day that we're either in the rapture or we're dead. But, you know, you have to live as if there's no tomorrow, but also live in a way that if there is a lot of tomorrows, you're still going to finish your Christian walk well, you know. And I think that's that balance where, that's where it takes a biblical balance of looking at things from a longer term perspective. So yeah, the whole staying thing is a, and you know, you look at Paul. I mean, he had a lot of potential motivation to quit. I mean, I haven't gone through any of this hardly, right? Yeah, you know, tribulations. I haven't had much in the way of tribulations, not compared to Paul. You know, stripes, imprisonment. You know, sleeplessness occasionally, but not very much. I've done some fasting, but probably nothing like Paul. You know, so when you look at all this, you can see that I think. This whole issue, when he lists all those things, he puts in the middle of it, by the Holy Spirit and by the power of God. You know, he's got those two things in there, and he's readily recognizing that, like Sid said, by the power of the flesh, he wouldn't make it through all that. But it's only by the power of God and by the Holy Spirit that he's able to stand through all that stuff.
Because kind of the way he laid that out, it was like, it's like first he talks about his tribulations, which he talks about in 4, and he lists all those, and then he gets down here and he talks about, but by the word of the truth and by the power of God and armor and all that, and then he gets into the where people are coming against him in the last part of it. And he's kind of got it set up in an order here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, too, you could say it's a lot on how he views what's coming at him. He could view it like, oh, man, not again, or I must be doing something right. I'm torquing off somebody. Because it's going to, whatever you're teaching is going to, separate people. And they're going to come back, so you can, in a sense, one aspect, if you're teaching the truth and people are not liking it, and some people are, well, you might be more successful than you think, depends on how you view it.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts on that passage? Go further?
Yeah.
Okay. How about 11 through like 18? Somebody want to read that for us? 11 to the end of the chapter.
I'll go. O Corinthians, we have spoken openly to you. Our heart is wide open. You are not restricted by us, but you are restricted by your own affections. Now, in return for the same, I speak as to children. You also be open. Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? And what communion has light with darkness? And what accord has Christ with Belial? Or what part has a believer with an unbeliever? And what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God, as God has said, I will dwell in them and walk among them. I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Therefore, come out from among them and be separate, says the Lord. Do not touch what is unclean, and I will receive you. I will be a father to you, and you shall be my sons and daughters, says the Lord Almighty.
So you can see here when he gets to 11, he's tying that together with what he said before, right? So he's just trying to tell them that, you know, his motives are good, and he's open to them and taking emotional risks, if you will, with them, being open and stuff, and yet, you know, they're not really responding in kind.
My mind went to completely different context, but I can't remember who it is, but I think it's Paul. Your blood is not on my hands. I think that's a little different emphasis than this, but it's kind of the same thing,
mm-hmm.
In a way, I think, a little bit.
Yeah, where he's saying he's done everything he can on his end.
Yeah. I mean, he's kind of saying that here, too.
Mm-hmm.
In a, just a different tone.
What does it mean, restricted? Restricted from being open?
I was thinking that their flesh is restricting their spiritual growth.
Because 11, 13 will speak about you. Well, 13 says you also be open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're doing the right thing there, connecting those three together. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But
and he mentions
that if you are restricted by your own affections,
mm-hmm.
What would that mean?
Well, you know, when I think part of this is talking about this whole issue of transparency. At least that's part. That's what I see in this is. You know, if you're trying to have a close relationship with people or with a person and you want to talk about substantive issues, not just like the weather. So like you meet someone, you don't know what you talk about, the weather or mm-hmm. whatever, right?
Football.
Football, yeah. Well, that's pretty substantial, though. Yeah. That's pretty weighty. But, you know, and as you get to know people, the better you get to know them, the more you can talk about things that are closer to your heart that you wouldn't share with everybody, right?
Right.
And in general, those are more meaningful conversations, and they deal with topics that are more important in your life, which is why you don't share them with everyone, right? Because you don't want to be hurt or whatever. So there's wisdom in not, you know, casting your pearls before swine or whatever. There's this whole wisdom in knowing, you know, who you can have close fellowship with, and they're not gonna turn on you or whatever, right? And so I think part of what Paul's trying to get at here is he's saying, you know, we've poured ourselves into you, and you know, talk to you about important matters, and you're staying kind of aloof mm-hmm. and restricted. So you're not giving us an opening to who you really are.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so it's like you know, it's like when you run into somebody and you have a conversation, they're all smiles and everything's fine, but really that's not true. They're offended or right, there's mm-hmm. something else going on, and they won't
mm-hmm.
bring that out. They're holding it close.
Because they're not close to you, you haven't opened up yourself to them.
Well, I think it varies. I think I think it's like Paul's saying, there's conditions, there's situations where you can open yourself to other people and they still won't open you. Mm-hmm. He's saying, you're not reciprocating.
Yeah.
It's partly, I think, what he's saying.
Well, I mean, then.
Yeah.
Maybe what he was saying up here before that was making him more open, more mm-hmm. more like they would get to know him better.
Right.
So maybe.
Yeah, that's true, because, I mean, that, you know, just spending time with somebody is makes a huge difference in getting to know who they are, right? And so you have this issue where, you know, and this is a, there's a lot of ways you could go with this, but from my perspective, one of the ways you go with this is in ministry, it's really hard to make substantial progress in ministry or in sanctification if you're not willing to get close to other Christians.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'll only ever deal with superficial things, mm-hmm. and then you can't share your real feelings and struggles, even for prayer, mm-hmm. with somebody, right? And so you got this situation where what you really want, what God's trying to achieve in general, I think, is because of sin, there's all these layers that we hide behind, right? And so he's trying to get us to open up those layers, to communicate, just like between God and man, to communicate in a way where it's more transparent, and there's, because of the layers that come in there, no matter how we want to think about it, our motives might be different, but it ends up being hypocrisy, right? Because we're feeling and thinking one way and we're representing it differently.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, that's hypocrisy. It may not be.
Sometimes it's good judgment.
Yeah.
There are times where that's prudent.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Because you could.
But if
make
you're
things worse. You
yeah.
know.
But if you're dealing in a situation where
generally
part of what you're trying to do is to bridge a gap between people. You know, and there's all sorts of different, you know, Christian ministries, legal court settings, marriages. Family settings, right? Mm-hmm. Children and parents. I mean, there's just a million different ways this all goes.
But it is true, though, that you can, on a few occasions, you decide to, you know, kind of help somebody. And, of course, you go over to the house, you make an effort, and you become open, and they open the door that much. And then all of a sudden you think, hey, I'm going along, it's going along. You go home after a few days, a week, maybe 2 weeks, and all of a sudden the door goes shut. And then you're going, what happened? And it's a pattern that people follow. And that's what I kind of see here. You got a pattern where
mm-hmm.
these people are going, open the door, but it's not, they still got the door just open enough they can get it closed quick enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it's as far as you're going to get. And they will never grow beyond that point because they won't open themselves up to why they're not growing. So it's, and you can beat on that door all day long and they're going to keep you away. Just the way it is.
And there's one thing that we're all different and we're all different stages of social abilities or whatever, and some people like me, I'm kind of a learner, it's so, if you're that way, you don't really open up to anybody around you. It's all superficial, basically. Even when you go to church, and I don't think God wants us that way, but that's a very difficult thing for some people to do. Some people can just go up and start a conversation with anybody, you know.
Yeah.
And before long, they're like, these guys must have known each other their whole lives, but they haven't. I've known several people like that, but it for some people, it's just not that way. It's very difficult.
Yeah.
I will say, though, too, that I think that a lot of what's perceived to be socially well-adjusted, easy to get along with,
mm-hmm.
is false, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's
just a different form of... difficulty in communication.
I think God wants us to be open, of course, with each other. I
mm-hmm.
mean, but so it's difficult.
I think it is, and I think that's why you know, if you look at churches in general, they're every church I've been in is has focused on small groups, you know, home groups or prayer groups or whatever, because they know that in a really big setting, you just, it's impractical for one, and it just doesn't happen because you just don't get to know individuals well enough, because it takes time to build trust, right? So it's not like you're supposed to walk around and trust everyone you don't know 100%, right? That's not what God's after, you know.
Well, not that I derail the thing or whatever, but my father is always like, I always tend to go to like, you on the internet, right? And then I go to Facebook or any of those other things, and that's what it is. It's like, because people don't have another person right there to make them close up or anything, they just think I could, it's like a journal, I can write whatever I want. And so like, you know, you have all these people who are, you know, disclosing things that are very personal to them, but to the rest of the world who doesn't know them or all this. And that's why, like, you know, those kinds of things can get really ugly sometimes.
Right. Because it's the opposite extreme of not really using wisdom.
Yeah.
Right.
Do people do that?
Yeah.
Because anything I ever see, the few times I'm on it, just seems like snippets of just nothing. Just commenting on, I don't know, but I don't see it, so I'm asking.
Usually I don't see that. Usually it's because those people have already, like, gotten out everything they had to say. Like, way before, and now they're just, you know, now they just have nothing to say, like, anything that comes in their head.
I must be reading that phase of it.
I don't know.
I don't get on that, but every time I hear somebody talk about it, it's like somebody saying something bad about somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, this is a constant thing. Everybody's throwing too much out there.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the other issue is, you know, when people aren't flesh to face to face, right?
It's easy to...
And that's why, you know, internet ministries have tremendous limitations, because as a Christian, you need to be plugged in with real people.
Yeah.
You know, in a real setting where they're breathing and looking at you and blinking and burping and all the other things.
Scratching.
Yeah. Drinking cocoa and all that stuff. Yeah, that's why I had my hot cocoa. And so this kind of comes up too in that, you know, I think Greg would say this too, because we've had conversations about this, but there are a lot of situations, and I think this is what Sid was alluding to too, because Sid is ministering to people who have different issues they're trying to work through, and they want help, but as you get close to ground zero, it's too difficult. And the pattern, you know, either they're not willing to accept that there is a pattern or something that to deal with, or they were hoping, well, there's all different things. Sometimes they want attention, you know, there's all different things. But if they're serious about wanting to change, sometimes they just freak out and they can't handle that level of openness and communication. And so they, like Sid says, they shut the door and then sometimes they bolt. You know, they leave the church. Sometimes people leave the church because they like a different church. That's fine. Sometimes they leave the church because they don't like certain doctrine you're teaching. But there's other times where people leave because you've gotten to know them over a period of time. And as you've gotten to know them, there's issues that you try to start to address. And it's just too hard. It's easier just to go somewhere else. And then when they go somewhere else, then that pattern can repeat itself, maybe, you know. And I think that's one of the challenges, you know, especially people ministering in large churches, it must, you know, must be a really big challenge, because you have a lot of people there. How do you really get them plugged in to where they're really interacting with other people in a way where, you know, they can bless those people with their gifts, and there's this whole interaction that goes on. Because when push comes to shove, you know, when somebody has, you know, something medical goes wrong in their family, or some other real need comes up, or they need help on the roof or whatever, it's the people in your little group that are the ones that show up, who know who you are. Yeah, you might call the pastor or whatever, a couple pastors, whatever, but outside of that, it's the people that you have a relationship with. So this whole business of kind of opening up and not, you know, it's like, you know, it's like this whole business, if you don't risk, then you don't ever get hurt, but then you don't get the riches of the relationships you can have if you take those risks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think that it comes across in all different ways in relationships and in church fellowships and whatever, business and everything else. So I think he was feeling frustrated here with the Corinthians because he's not really holding anything back and they're still kind of staying aloof and not really allowing him to get close to them. That's what it seems like when you read.
So then he says, I speak to you as to children.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how that goes into that either.
Yeah, I think a little bit further he talks about he makes the comment about like being a father too.
In 18, I will be a father to you.
Okay, yeah, I missed that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you shall be my son.
Yeah, so there's where it's talking about God being as a father.
But that even in just a human family, you're supposed to know your children so well that you can guide individuals to where they could make their niche in life and just allow them to get there, but you guide them to that point. And not saying this is what they're going to follow, but you get them there so they have a start. And you have to make that, and that takes part of getting to know them. So that I can see that you have a father that knows you like the best that well.
Mm-hmm.
And then because you have a relationship with them, they're open back. So,
well, I guess in 13 it says, in return for the same, I speak to you as children, you also be open. And so that seems like maybe that's also what I'm just being plain and simple with you. I just want you guys to be open with me too.
Yeah.
That was kind of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When he says, you know, in verse 11, we have spoken openly to you. Our heart is wide open. And then he's saying, in return for the same, in response to our affection toward you. So it's kind of this idea. I mean, I think it's true in relationships too. I mean. Part of building trust and opening up is becoming convinced that the other person is not going to hurt you, right? Because it's, I mean, the world's full of sin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're open and you get close to somebody, the biggest risk you take is you're going to get hurt, and not just hurt superficially, hurt deeply.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's why it takes time to have relationships. You know,
trust.
It takes time to build trust. It takes just a second to lose it and a long time to build it, right? So there's this whole issue of building trust, and to build trust takes time, and it also takes a willingness to be open. Because if all you're ever around someone for a long time isn't, it's all just superficial, you're not really getting down into the layers of the onion where mm-hmm. you're to the areas where you could get hurt because you're sharing things on your heart or whatever, or just allowing people to know how you feel about different things. It's easy for people to ridicule, or you know, or to share gossip, or to criticize, or you know, there's all different ways that we can hurt other people when we know more about them.
But also, when you build trust, I know you can break it easy, but there's also a grace there. Because you're looking at that person going, that's just not normal for him. Why would he have done that to me? And so you question why that, and you can walk over to them, and that's what you're supposed to do, even as from one believer to another, and say, mm-hmm. okay, let's get this aired out as to why you did that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, forgive and go on with like this. Because if you don't,
mm-hmm.
then that's when the trust starts to fly away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you think that's the primary reason that people don't really seek other people? Trust, because my mom's that way, right? We were just down, I hadn't seen her in 2 years, and we were down in Florida, and she's 80 and lives by herself, and you know, she's been that way. That's just how my memory of her, and at one point I said, you know, because she had a little dog, you know, a lot of elder people get little pets and stuff. I said, well, you should get a cat, you know. She didn't want a dog again. She said, no, I don't want a cat. I said, you know, and whatever thing she's made up in her mind that wouldn't be a good idea. And she said, I said, don't you just, because she doesn't see anybody, you know, except on Sundays. And I said, don't you just crave just interaction with a living being? Even a pet is better than nothing. And she, this is what she said. She said, no, I've got the television.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, that's just how she is. And I ask her, you know, because she goes to people at her church, you know, she's older than me. They know her, and at my sister's wedding, they come up to her and talk to her and are very good with her, you know, and she doesn't seem to know any of them other than, it's not like she's senile or anything. She just chooses not to, you know. And I said, oh, I like the pastor. He's very nice. That's what she says. Very nice. That's what she said here about Greg and about them. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're very nice. She has, but no interest in things under the surface.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way she's been. As far as my whole memory of her is just that's who she is.
I would answer that as the older you get, the easier it is to stay at home and do nothing.
Yeah.
And because you're comfortable there, it takes any change is traumatic. And the more you stay by yourself, the more you stay away from people, the harder it becomes to do that,
yeah.
to get out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I think maybe that's why older people, you just see a lot of them just staying at home.
Yeah.
I'm finding, I mean, I'm not terribly old, but I'm finding it much easier to stay home, you know, and we used to go all over the place. And
I find it
comforting to stay home, you know, and not be out and be in with around a bunch of people and stuff like that. So it's, I think it's kind of inherent in getting older. I really do. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Steve.
I find that people, what they're trying to do, they think about what's bothering them all the time. But more and more like on a subconscious level, where it's there in front of their eyes, and what happens, I think, why they pick up television or anything, it keeps their mind busy, so it doesn't go back to that. And it's a protection, so I don't visit that thing anymore. And the biggest thing is, and you know, some people call it a skeleton in the closet, or I guess, and when they open the door and get that skeleton out, where like this, then they go. Then it's not that thing that sits and hides in the back of their head. And they do anything to keep their busy. I mean, from sex or whatever else they can do. And I've seen so-called Christians, and probably are. And they're still trying to get rid of that memory just to not think of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really kind of on the creepy side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, yeah, as you said that, I feel kind of bad because I do that a lot because I'm alone. I'm by myself a lot, so that's why I do. I watch TV or play video games.
Oh, gotcha.
Because it is. It's like a drug. You know, you don't have to think about your life when you're doing that, because it distracts your brain. But you know, but like also on Kevin's note, it's a little bit sad because a lot of
a lot more young people are becoming like that. They just, because their parents didn't teach them or whatever, you know, just the world they grow up in just doesn't prepare them for how to deal with other people. So they, you know, they end up being a lot like that and communicating over only over like the internet or something. And or they only, their only friends are like, they have a pet, they have a dog. Like more and more young people I see do that. They'll get like a dog and, oh, this is my friend. It's too hard to relate to other people.
It's
unconditional love.
Yeah, the pets can give you unconditional love, and you're not getting that from people.
And nowadays, your video games and all the apparatus that they have, you know, they occupy your time. I think it disconnects you from everybody else. Mm-hmm. And the longer you stay that way, the harder, I think.
But, you know, everyone in this room, you might say you're a loner and, you know, whatever, and... But everyone's here and are fairly transparent. I mean, I don't know everything about you, but you're seem a transparent. You don't.
Know
you don't I mean, you seem. Everyone here seems. You know, if we were to have a discussion, you know,
I agree.
You would tell. You would have a fairly good layer level of transparency, and some people just. It's just
right.
They
well,
just
like, yeah, we are
like my mom. I mean, she's my mother. And I know nothing about her.
But there's a part of me that says when people have these pets and they think they're getting love from a pet.
Yeah, it's not.
No. Okay, well, in their head, they are, actually are. And I'm going, this is getting creepy. Because that dog or cat can only react to another cat or another dog. And you're relating a human
personality on
to a dog. Right. And I'm going, this is... a product of, I think, sin, because it's just not normal.
Yeah, now, I do think you can make a pretty good case that the pet mania that's kind of taken place. I mean, if you look at the pet store, I mean, if you go into a farmer supply, you know, there's a quarter of the store is all, it's this huge area that's all pet stuff, and people having to take their pet in the store and everywhere they go and all this, you know. But I do think. And I've heard other people say this too, and I think it's true that it's a sign of the relational dysfunction that's grown in our culture, as there's been more hurt, you know, relationship problems in families and just all these different things. People are turning different places to try to meet those needs, and they're not necessarily appropriate. Like, and that's why they're placing it on an animal. Like, this is my real close buddy. You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they're down to this is mom and this is dad. That's my kid, and I'm going, okay, now you're really getting creepy.
Yeah.
Because you know, and then you got uncles and aunts, you know, and here, come over and see Uncle Sid. You know, and I'm going, yeah, that's not. I have nothing to do with that dog.
I'm not his mother.
It's developed more and more, like, as you know, our nation has moved away from God. And like what Kevin was saying, you know, about us being able to come here and be open with each other, that's good. I mean, he's right, we're doing a lot better than a lot of people. But you know, we have our faith, we have Christ, the Holy Spirit, and all that, and it's definitely that helps us. I'm pretty sure I'd be a much different person if I was, if I wasn't saved.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that's a big part of the problem, is just the large portion of the people in the country and this world that just aren't, you know, don't know Christ, don't follow Christ, and it's much harder to deal with then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it boils down to.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of cases.
Going on when Jerry's talking about having relationships, my family, I grew up that on Sundays after church, we went and visited the grandparents. That was when we went and connected with family. And so, for me, that would be strange to not have that relationship, to not have that connection. Because that's just what we did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So not socially, but I mean, in a social way, you get used to being with people and talking. And I mean, there were times where they'd say, "You kids go out and play," because there was something that the adults needed to talk about, but you were still there.
Family is very important. And when,
well,
when you live a long ways away,
it's harder.
You're the only immediate family there.
Well, I think there's all these different factors involved. You know, one of them is just how mobile our culture is now, and how used to you find work in a local place and work there all your life. And so families were kind of around each other. Now it's like you're just all over the place.
And, and grandparents don't mean as much, I don't think, anymore as they did before. I kind of envy the Asian culture where grandparents are living in the house with the rest of the family.
Generational.
I think that's really neat.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different aspects involved, but the same principles, you know, because basically the less you know someone, the easier it is to vilify them and to not treat them with respect. And I think that's one of the things that we see on the internet and in the news media as well, and especially on the comment sections after news articles, is, you know, there's just, you know, people say we have, you know, the most tolerant culture. Well, we might have tolerance in the sense of just people allowing for anything, but that's not real tolerance. Real tolerance is treating someone you disagree with respect, just because they're a human being made in God's image, and you know, you're going to be civil. And I think our civilization has lost civility, you know, to where people who disagree can't talk civilly about the different principles. They got to start calling names and let language just degenerate, and it's to a point where it's just not even communication. You know, and so a lot of it is just, you know, when you're with somebody in flesh and blood, it's just a lot harder to diss them and to, you know, and just to treat them crummily.
You know, I agree with what you're saying, but you guys went and saw that movie Lincoln, right? I remember some of those discourses they were having that they used flowery language, but they were sharp. You know, they were... it was very, very fascinating to see just how 200 years ago, how we talked to each other in those settings, and like you're talking about. And it was fascinating. Anyway, it's a little side note, but they were civil, I guess.
I mean, there is the issue where people can look civil, but behind the scenes it's just as brutal. So he turns the corner and he gets to verse 14.
That's a verse.
And so if you think, I mean, that whole passage, there's a lot there. But if you think about the context of what Paul's been talking about, and he's in the middle of this thing where he's talking to the Corinthians, and he's been saying, you know, you're not opening up to us, you know, other people are criticizing our ministry, and he's going to call them, you know, false apostles and so on. So when he talks, you know, here he talks about don't be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. There's the context that he's kind of thrown this out. I don't think it means it doesn't apply to a wider context, but I don't think it matches a context where we automatically just jump in and assume. But I think he's talking about that, you know, they're responding to other people who claim to be Christians who he's saying are not true believers. So I guess what I'm saying is, in the context of the letter of what he's talking about, you know, he's contrasting his ministry against these other false ministries as part of it. So when he uses this word yoked together, what's the image that brings?
Okay.
By a big wooden thingy.
So when you got these two animals that are yoked together, what are they supposed to be doing?
Working together,
yeah. And so there's these passages in the Old Testament that say you can't put an ox and a donkey together in the same yoke. And part of it is, is just saying, if the animals are supposed to be accomplishing some goal, like an ox is supposed to be pulling a furrow or whatever, if they're unequally yoked, it just doesn't work because they can't work together effectively.
They're just going in a circle.
Yeah, going in a circle, or one of them brays and the other one butts, or I don't know. You know, I'm.
Because they're going different directions. One's pulling.
Well, but no, we've got one that's stronger.
Yes.
Than
right.
The, than the weaker one. Mm. So you're not going to go. Right.
It's kind of like rowing a boat. Same deal.
So it's, you know, I mean, if he wrote it today, maybe he'd say something about being on the same page. You know.
Mm-hmm. So it's mismatched.
Mismatched. Okay, what's, just read it for me. What's
okay. Do not be mismatched with unbelievers, for what partnership is there between righteousness and lawlessness? Or what fellowship does light have with darkness?
Yeah,
keep reading?
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah, if you want to, but I mean, the main thing I was trying to get at is that that's the Holman Christian.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just this idea that it's supplied most often to marriage,
mm-hmm.
but the context he's talking about here isn't really
marriage.
I mean, it's not exclusive of marriage, but mm-hmm. but he's, you know, he hasn't been talking about marriage so far. He's talking about, you know, ministry,
mm-hmm.
and working together with people who they're not opening up to him, they're opening them up, or they're responding to other people.
It seems like that would relate directly to verse 12, you are restricted by your own affections.
Mm-hmm.
And then he talks about being unequally yoked together with the unbelievers, so the people that you
are
your friends
mm-hmm.
aren't believers, and so you're being kind of directed off in a different direction.
Yeah, I think so. I think this is one of those passages where the principle can be pulled out and validly used without distorting it
mm-hmm.
to wider context.
Yeah.
But I think when you look at the context that it's in, there's some insights there that you wouldn't get otherwise. Like this idea of, he's talking about affection,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
You know, and even when you, I mean, it's pretty obvious, but even when you take this verse out and you go to your teenage daughter with it, right? Or your son,
yeah.
and you're saying, you know, you're building an affectionate relationship with someone who's not a believer, and every day that you don't cut it off is the day it's getting more affectionate.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a day come when you're going to have to make a choice, and you're going to have gone far enough down that affection road that you're not going to be able to make the right choice.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just like a shrimp on a hook, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you get it in the lip of the fish, you can get it out, but you get it down into the throat, it's not going to come out, you know? And so, again, affections,
yeah.
and he's talking about here, affections for the world, isn't it? Yeah. So
if you get saved and you don't leave all your unsaved friends, you just stay buddies with them, and they're the ones you mess around with, then you may not be saved very long, or you may not be saved after, you know, mm-hmm. in the first place, however you do that.
Yeah, it's a tricky deal, isn't it? Because, you know, like he says, you know, I don't pray for them to go, you know, out of the world. So there's this issue where, you know, you're a witness too, but when you look at a lot of the biblical teaching, is it doesn't say that good company corrupts bad morals.
But
it says the other way around, you know.
Yeah.
But to hang around them too much, also, you're guilty by association. You might not have done anything,
right.
but because people see you there continually,
mm-hmm.
he's got to be a part of it, or he wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
But it kind of, Bible kind of lets you know that you would be changed if that's what you do,
mm-hmm.
if you
mm-hmm.
just hang around unbelievers all the time.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the Catholic Church, to pick a sore point with a lot of people, but, and I think Sid's on the same page as I am to some degree on this, which is, I don't know that much about the Catholic Church like he does, because he's been in it, but to me, you know, like a good example would be Michael Card. Now, I don't know all the details, but Michael Card years ago was very evangelical Christian. And then over time he started doing music and concerts with John Michael Talbot, who's got maybe one of the best voices in the world, you know, maybe the top 10 voices that I would think are amazing. He's one of them. But anyway, but he's like a Roman Catholic and he's very much into the monastic movement. No, you're thinking of a different person.
Michael Carter? I mean, John Michael Talbot.
No, he's not into Messianic. You're thinking of the guy we went to see in concert, Paul Wilbur.
Yeah.
Not Paul Wilbur, John Michael Talbot.
I'm thinking of the other.
Yeah.
He got into it. Because Michael Talbot and his brother
Terry Talbot,
into Pentecostal stuff because when they were together, they were doing Pentecostal.
Yeah. But my point was mainly that he started doing projects with people who are deeply committed to the Roman Catholic faith. And the Roman Catholic faith, you know, the articles that it endorses condemn us as Protestants.
Mm-hmm.
And so at some point you can say, well, we have a common faith, we both know Jesus, et cetera, et cetera. But regardless of what's going on in your local fellowship, if you're associating with a movement that condemns true Christians and you're unwilling to separate from that, right?
Yeah.
Then you got to start saying, well, who's deceived here? What's really happening here? And I'm not saying that that's the only relationship that led to this, but over time, he's gotten into a lot of way more goofy, out there stuff. And at one time, he was very solidly evangelical and would not have been doing co-projects with someone who was, you know, deeply into the Roman Catholic faith. Now, so a lot of people say, well, isn't that wonderful? It's ecumenical and, you know, all this, and they're brothers in Christ and all this, and their songs emphasize, you know, we both have the same Father, and so on and so forth. You know, but is your dad happy about the fact that the thing you're in is condemning half his children, if they're really true children, right? So, I mean, there's a lot of issues there, but just to say that this business of starting to work with somebody who's really not spiritually
on the job too. That's another place of being unequally yoked. That could cause problems.
Yeah, like we just did that kind of business. And the wife was saved, husband wasn't. He was saved later.
But I wasn't either at the time, so we were equally yoked.
Well,
you were equally unequally.
And then you became saved.
And he
and then
later.
So you're not making the same decisions, and thank goodness we didn't have any big ones, but there was potential there for trouble.
Yeah. So, you know, when he kind of gets at it, what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness, and what communion has light with darkness? You know, this gets at that whole business again, where people, you know, there's a tendency to gloss over how dramatic it is. There's these two kingdoms, you know, you're in one or the other. So, like, you have a marriage where one person, you know, according to the Bible, one person's in the kingdom of light and one person's in the kingdom of darkness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the magnet effect. It just keeps pushing away. It has to.
And the way you go about, just the way you think about, well, raise children now, right? And
go to church or not?
All these questions about what are you going to teach them about how what they're here for and where they came from, and there's a tendency in our culture to say, well, isn't it wonderful when people can be just so different and they still, you know, they have this true love and everything else. And the Bible is saying, you know, there's a spiritual reality where there's this divide, and there's no like middle road. Yeah.
You ever seen the bumper stickers that coexist? One ball.
Yeah. Symbols.
That's what I think of. Like, they just say it because they don't understand. None of those other religions would appreciate that sticker either, but like, it's the whole idea that they think we should all get together.
Well, on one level, it's a good bumper sticker because Christianity does promote freedom of conscience
mm-hmm.
and respect between faiths.
Yeah.
But the way they mean it,
yes.
where we can all just worship the same thing.
Once, I had a conversation with a friend a while ago, and we were both kind of talking about that. It's just that, you know, everybody in America is all about the whole tolerance thing. But tolerance isn't what they really mean. They want acceptance, not tolerance.
Approval.
Right.
You made a good point about that sticker. I bet none of the any of the members of any of those religions were involved in making that bumper sticker. It was someone secular that thought, oh, that's a good idea. But I bet nobody in the, any of those faiths thinks that's a good idea to put a sticker like that. That's a good point.
I'm getting, you know, you're starting to see it since all this came down. There is a post that people put are, let's live and let live and we'll all get together. And I'm going, I'm the one that did it. I just read one tonight before we came over here. And I know she's a believer, but that is the most liberal thing. I'm sitting there watching, and I just everything I want to do to say, what has changed you? You know, you used to be, but now you are kind of from your thing there. I would say you're pretty wishy-washy here.
Either you're this way or this way.
Come on now. You know, tell me what. Quit doing this, you know.